We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
When you start building your business around the consumer, they're going to decide what's going to win. And when you think about social commerce, the reason why it makes sense is, like, where do you go to get recommendations? Probably the people you're connected to on those social platforms. So being able to close that funnel of how I discover things and how I actually purchase things seems like a natural fit. Social commerce isn't a surprise. It is something that I think the market has been moving towards for a long time.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Social media's powerful influence to reach consumers is a game changer for many businesses, and today's guest is at the center of where social media and shopping meet. Today, we're talking to Martin Gilliard, the head of industry, retail superstores, and groceries for Facebook. In his role at Facebook, Martin drives the development of data products for the retail vertical. Join us as we dive into how Facebook is working with retailers now and in the future. I'm joined today by my colleague, my friend, and my co-host, Sarah Rand. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Bill.
How are you?
Oh, I'm very happy.
Why would you be happy?
Well, I'm always happy, but we are here in San Francisco for NRF Tech, which is always exciting. And I got to go to Martin's session this morning, so I'm energized about what CIOs are doing for retail.
Martin, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you.
We're really glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
So tell me, well, not how you got here, because we talked about that, plain, middle seat, bad. But how did you get into this role at Facebook? What was the Martin story?
You know, that's a very complicated story, because I will tell you that in my entire career, I've focused on driving impact and outcomes, and that can lead to a lot of different things. The reason that this role specifically mattered to me is that it was a combination of a lot of things I've done through my entire career. I started my career as a developer, actually, that became a marketer, which gave me a very unique view on how those two things work together. I've created a startup that was a data company. It was all about analytics. And I've had the opportunity to work on the client side as a CIO, and now I'm working at Facebook on how to actually work with CIOs and CMOs to leverage Facebook's platform for their businesses.
Wow. That is, I mean, you think about it, analytics is everything. So if you have a background and experience in that, everybody's talking about analytics these days. How does that, I mean, when you look at a platform like Facebook, mm-hmm. I mean, the analytics are vast. How do we corral all of that in order to accomplish what you're seeking to do?
So a lot of that conversation is around data as an asset and how do you leverage that as an asset. And I always tell everyone that data without context means nothing. Right. So when you think about Facebook, obviously we have, you know, 2.7 billion people to use our platform. So we know a lot about how these customers, how our customers are actually talking to each other, how they're leveraging our platform. The advantages for retailers is that they have the same value proposition in their stores and on their websites.
Right.
So they have the context of the relationship with their customers. And when you're able to combine what you know about your customers with the scale and reach of Facebook, be able to create experiences that extend beyond the walls of properties that you own into a place where they're spending a lot of their time. So here's a question for you. What's the first thing you did today when you woke up? What's the first thing you did when you picked up your phone?
Well, this is unusual. I mean, because last night was the last episode of Game of Thrones, so I was looking to see what people were writing about it. That's what I did, which is not usual, honestly. I mean, to be honest, Martin, yeah. And I'm not kidding, and I'm not just saying it, I do check Facebook.
Right. Well, that's become a habit of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And because of that, you as a retailer, you almost have to be part of that experience to be relevant. Because if you think about the growth of what we call these disruptive brands, like the e-commerce companies that are being found and growing because of like Instagram, well, it's because people are on Instagram right. All the time. So if you're not there, there's a dialogue that you're not a part of.
Right.
And so if the biggest thing you sell is a relationship, to not be part of the conversation means that you're being left out.
Interesting.
Can you talk about some of the experiences that retailers are creating using that data?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So what Facebook allows retailers to do is to leverage their data in context of a relationship. So for example, if a retailer already knows that you've bought a certain product, they could actually start targeting ads that are complements to that. They could even show ads that allow they point you to where the physical store is if they know that you're a customer that prefers to buy things in stores versus online. So having that context and how you want to use Facebook from a marketing perspective allows you to do that. The other part of it is that we are having more retailers that are thinking of Facebook as a communication channel. Mm-hmm. People already try to communicate. The customer expects that you actually are part of that conversation all the time. Mm-hmm. So when you're not there is very apparent, but when you are there, there's an opportunity to create an engagement that you probably wouldn't have. Because there's more interactions that will not happen in a physical store. There's more interactions that will not happen on your website, but they expect you to be there. They expect you to be relevant, and they expect you to be present. So how do you do that as a retailer? It's more than just marketing on Facebook. It's how you actually talk to your customer.
Yeah, huge. I mean, almost mind-blowing. As any regular listener knows, I'm a liberal arts major from a large land-grant university in the Deep South, and those kind of things just kind of blow my mind. I mean, to the extent, but it's like, it almost sounds like boiling the ocean, Martin. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much out there, so much potential, and it's changing every day. It's like the one day you think, oh, I've got that lassoed, and then the next day you're like, whoa, this new opportunity for us. So where do the resources go? Where does the time go? How do we capitalize on that and yet at the same time look to what this means for us in the future?
So I think a lot of that is about understanding the cultural change that needs to happen at your organization. Facebook, we've had the advantage of being a digital company from our beginning. And so what moving fast means for us could mean something very different for what it means in retail when a lot of your assets are actually physical.
Right, right.
And so how do you adapt to that? I think there are things that companies can learn from Facebook, but there's also a lot of things that we can learn from those companies. We're no longer 3,000 people. And so I think that we've started to take a bigger approach where we listen as much as we talk. And I think a lot of things that we create now, we're co-creating with a lot of retailers versus just telling them this is how we think things should happen.
So does that mean like AR ads and things like that that you guys are working together on?
Well, there's a lot of ways that we can experiment in those things. And I think the challenge has been, how does that fit into how this company operates? Like, we can offer it as a product, mm-hmm. but does it matter to your organization? Mm-hmm.
There's an authenticity that needs to be a part of it, right?
Right, because I think consumers are smart enough to understand tricks. They want to make sure that what you're doing is something that is authentic to them versus something you're just trying to try because you think is cool.
Yeah.
I think being able to leverage Facebook but really still be who you are is important for a lot of brands. And I think as we've continued to create more things that solve problems that are outside of our walls for these retailers, I think we'll allow them to be able to do more of that on our platform.
How does a medium to small-sized, I mean, I can imagine, mm-hmm. you know, the big guys right. in the room that are, they've got teams that are probably pretty large working on this from marketing to their tech teams. But if you're a regional store, consumers expect you to be just as engaged on Facebook as they do the biggest retail in the world. So how do you do that?
Well, the thing that's amazing about Facebook is that it could be an equalizer. It's where if I'm able to be innovative, to be continue to be true to who I am as my brand, and continue to leverage my customer as how I want to make decisions and putting them at the center of that and creating experiences that are relevant to that, that's where you're able to compete. I'll give you something that's interesting. A lot of the businesses that have been selling products on Instagram don't even have a website. So they don't even have that overhead. So what does that mean?
Is that through Marketplace?
No, it's through Instagram.
Oh, through Instagram. I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they don't have their own websites.
They've been hacking this for years.
Wow.
And most recently, we launched a checkout on Instagram. And obviously, for a couple of years, we've had a marketplace where you could actually buy directly from Facebook.
We, side note, we showed Bill that a few months ago.
I'm a troglodyte.
And I'm pretty sure that he went back. We set him up by showing him his favorite brand, Chip and Joanna Gaines channel. And then I think he was gone for the rest of the day on his phone.
It's amazing. I mean,
shopping.
So, you know, yes, I'm a troglodyte. I admit it. I mean, you've got to show me these things. But once you show them, the worst is, though, that I'll go home and my mother's 93. Yeah. And I'll ask her, I said, well, where'd you get that? And she goes, well, I was on Instagram. I was like, what do you mean you were on Instagram? How did you know how to do that? And she said, well, her friends do it. So, yeah. I mean, obviously I'm not around people that are helping me as much as my mom is around people that are helping her. But so, it's this merging of social and commerce. I mean, how long has that been in process? But more importantly, where does it go? And again, it goes back to that boiling the ocean. I mean, there's just so much potential there.
Well, yes, there is a lot of potential there. But there's something I want to make sure we ground ourselves in first. When you start building your business around the consumer, they're going to decide what's going to win. And when you think about social commerce, the reason why it makes sense is, like, where do you go to get recommendations? Probably the people you're connected to on those social platforms. Where do you get your source of information about a product, whether you're a new mom, whether you're a dad looking to do something with your kid, whether you're just looking for somewhere to go. So being able to close that funnel of how I discover things and how I actually purchase things seems like a natural fit. Social commerce isn't a surprise. It is something that I think the market has been moving towards for a long time.
You know, Sarah mentioned briefly the AR experience, and you all seem to be perfecting that. I mean, you're in front of it, and you seem to be utilizing that effectively for, you know, the retailers. How does that grow? Is that something you're seeing? Is like, oh, that's good. But it's changing, and voice is going to take that over. Or what's that look like for not only today but for tomorrow?
So I don't know the answer to that one.
You don't?
I'm not.
You're not a futurist?
Well, so here's the thing. I get careful about people that call themselves futurists.
No, please. Because you always sit there and I was like, really? I mean, please. That's yesterday. But go ahead. Sorry.
Here's the one thing that I will say that is a given. We will continue to think about how do we build our business around our customers and do more things to support with their experiences around our platforms. And I think that's going to transform into a lot of different things depending on who we're working with. And so if you think about AR, VR, anything else we create, we're not necessarily creating that for a retailer. We're creating it because it's what consumers are demanding.
Right.
And so then the challenge becomes, how do we actually take what we're learning and that experience that we're creating, and how does that align with what a business is trying to accomplish?
Right.
So how does a retailer leverage what that means on our platform, and how do they leverage what their advantages and that experience on our platform?
You know, we have a lot of student listeners. There's National Retail Federation student programs in a lot of universities around the country. So ironically, I was somewhere and they said that their professor makes them listen to the show, which is the only reason I would think.
Thank you, professor somewhere.
And to them, yes, we're very grateful. But so we were talking a little bit before we started the program about CIOs and CTOs and all these different ways to describe what you do and what is happening in these companies. Give me kind of your thoughts about where that is, again, today, and how people should view that, where the opportunities lie, and how that's evolving.
I'll talk about it in terms of just how work is changing in general, because I think the executive jobs, as they've existed for the last hundreds of years, is probably going to change because the future is going to be very different. And so it's going to require a different skill set, a different way of people thinking. But I think the one thing that is constant is understanding how to completely understand a business and apply impact to that. So if you were to look at just a CIO role, which is what we talked about today, we had three panelists from three amazing companies that all have very different responsibilities. And they have a very big impact on their organizations.
Is that a good thing or not?
So I think there's massive differences between business models and organizations that require that people have different types of skills. I think the skills that will cross all of those are non-technical skills, actually. It's the ability to communicate, the ability to have people work together, the ability to sell ideas in. Like, those things are consistent no matter where you sit in the C-suite. Where you start getting to the specialist part of that is, what do I need to do with these assets that I have? Whether that asset be physical inventory, whether that asset is actual data, I think that's where it becomes a little more niche. But still, to be successful as an executive is the same across the C-suite. But I think those that come from technical backgrounds or data backgrounds or even art backgrounds, I will tell you that I started my career as a developer. I was an art major.
This is what I want to hear. This is good. All right.
So it's a complete reversal of using right versus left brain.
So you go ahead and play this for your parents. Let them know that you can be an art major and be hugely successful and work for a company like Facebook.
I did a double major in business and art.
That's
the reason why I did it, because what I wanted to do didn't exist at my school. But if you're a double major, you always got the first choice of classes. So
cool. That's
what I did.
Well, it's a good
smart.
Double major. Yeah, very smart, obviously.
Yeah. And so I took all the marketing courses, but I already knew how to write code. And the thing that was interesting about education is that education hasn't caught up with what's needed in the market. They're still teaching things that were not relevant. Like, I'm older than I look, and when I was in school, we were talking about COBOL. I was like, no one uses COBOL. I don't need this class.
I've become familiar with Drupal. I had no idea. I thought it was like an intestinal disease when they first started talking about it. But in fact,
he's come so far.
I really have. And thanks to people like Sarah.
So hold on. So you are now using Instagram in Drupal. That's a lot of progress.
I know how to use them, and I know what they do.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a start.
That's good.
But it is interesting because you are reading a lot of articles these days mm-hmm. about the need for greater STEM training, particularly among women. Yeah. Is this something that you all at Facebook are looking at very carefully?
So that is an industry thing that we need to address. I think the opportunities that have been available for women, we haven't allowed them to take those jobs because we need to change how we do our hiring processes. It's even in this conference, they ask the questions about, like, does inclusion matter? Does it change our business? Answer is yes. I mean, if you look at all the stats, companies that have diverse boards, that have diverse teams, outperform the other companies. So when we start talking about it in the light of how this makes our business better, I think all the things you're talking about are going to change. But right now, as an industry, women are underrepresented, but it's because the people in power have not changed the systems to make that more open.
That's very interesting.
So the session earlier today, one of the big themes that I took away was the idea that once you get into the CIO role, you need a mix of tech understanding, but you also need business understanding.
Yep.
But real success comes if you can be a change agent.
Correct.
You have to be willing to make change. And I think about going to school, whether you're an art major, or you go to a large land-grant university. How do you, as someone who wants to be a CIO someday, train yourself to be a change agent? Is that something you can coach, or is that something that is just in someone's DNA?
So I always tell everyone, champions are made, they're not born, right? So it's the same thing in careers. It's I think the fundamental thing is being able to understand what drives value is important. But when you look at the CIO role, I think as the role progresses, it will probably become less technical. And I know that sounds weird coming from someone who was a developer, but I will tell you that the things that make me successful in those roles is the ability to build the right teams, the ability to create the right vision, the ability to get people to buy into ideas. Actually knowing the technical components of that is not the biggest strength because you're talking to an audience that you know more than anyway. So it's not necessarily relevant to them. But what is relevant to them is how do we actually increase our margins? How do we drive more sales? How do we decrease our costs? How do we win new customers? Those are non-technical things. How you get there, that's where the technical knowledge matters, but that's not the part that's going to separate you. That's not the part that's going to make you a great CIO.
So this is a loaded question, sorry. But if you look at the challenge for Facebook, I mean, growth. Oh, it's always growth. How do we grow? How do you grow in this space?
I think that's going to be a question for a bigger executive than me.
Well, you're responsible for it, so Martin, get on it.
So I will speak about the growth that I see in my current position.
All right,
that works. We've seen our relationship with retailers get a lot deeper as we started creating things that solve problems that are beyond just e-commerce problems. I think solving an e-commerce problem for Facebook is easy to do. We're a digital business, but we recognize the need to solve things that are different for retail. And so we've created a number of products that allow retailers to leverage their biggest asset, which is what they know about a customer in the physical world, to drive outcomes regardless if it's online or in-store. That's probably the biggest shift that we've had as a business because it's an area that we may not have been as entrenched in.
Right.
But today I would say that we're a lot more entrenched and the things that we're creating are helping these businesses drive more outcomes for their businesses. We're helping them launch new brands on Instagram so your mother can find more of their brands as well. And now that you can use shopping, you can buy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that I know how to use it. You know, it was really interesting. We had Mindy Grossman, who's now with, what do they call it?
Formerly Weight Watchers.
She was our chairwoman. She was with HSNI, was their CEO, president and CEO. And one of the things that I always was very intrigued with was she was talking about now that someday it would get to the point where if you're watching television, mm-hmm. you'd see a dress on an actress or a suit on an actor, and you could press a button on your remote control. You could get more information about that, and you could buy it instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Is that for real? I mean, is that happening? Will that happen? I mean, the Instagram thing to me is kind of like that to a degree where you're seeing it set up. Mm-hmm. You're like, ooh, that would look great on my mantle. And you just push the button, and voila, mm-hmm. you got it.
So that is our sales ad for Instagram, so thank you.
Anything I can do to help, let me know.
That is, a lot of what you described is what the experience of Instagram is. So now how do I take where I'm discovering and learning new things and be able to purchase those things if I want to? Because we believe that every opportunity that you touch the customer is not just a branding opportunity, it's a commerce opportunity. And that's what Instagram Shopping will allow you to do. But I did want to make one comment about WW, formerly Weight Watchers. Mindy Grossman came by. I will tell you that she is the definition of a change agent.
She is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, trust me, there's so much energy and thoughtful enthusiasm and passion.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
But what's interesting about her, I know this is going a different direction, is she wasn't afraid to take risks.
Correct.
And she wasn't afraid to try things new.
Correct.
And so when we talk about successful executives, it's probably those things that will separate people more than your depth of knowledge of a piece of technology or a particular function.
Yeah, the willingness to take a risk.
Yeah.
So I just got the high sign, so we're running short on time, but we have a part of our program, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but we'd like to make you so.
Okay.
And it's called Rapid Fire.
Okay. All right.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So in this part of the program, what we're going to do is we're going to ask you a series of questions. You are not going to think about it. You're just going to answer. And
okay.
We're going to start out with Sarah. You go.
Instagram photo of a beach or a mountain?
Beach.
Favorite genre of music?
Jazz.
Favorite comfort food? All right. What's in your refrigerator?
Well, here's why I pause on that. I am originally from South Carolina. I can no longer eat my favorite comfort food. So I have to change that. But okay. Yeah, next question.
All right. How about what's always in your refrigerator?
Apples.
Mets or Yankees?
Yankees.
Mm. Last magazine you picked up at a airport?
People buy magazines at airports?
Last book you read? I'm failing at the questions today.
Last magazine you read when you picked it up in your doctor's office.
It was a Harvard Business Review. It was a Harvard Business Review on organization theory.
Excellent. Wow, that's big. All right.
I know, this light reading for a plane, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What was your first job?
My first job that I worked for someone, or the first job that I made money?
First job that you made money. Let's go with that.
So I worked at a t-shirt factory. I'm originally from South Carolina. That I got paid about $3 to $4 an hour, which is less than minimum wage at the time. But part of our agreement was I could keep all their regular shirts at the end of the week.
Oh, nice.
Because I basically sold their regular shirts on a week, and I made more money selling the shirts than I did actually working at the factory.
Wow.
So that was my first summer job.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sarah, last question. Get it right this time.
Lord. Let me see here. What are my options? If you could instantly master one skill, what would it be?
Oh, God.
See, I'm the worst at this. I'm fired. I'm done.
All right, let's ask this
nice
one.
Knowing you,
if you could be a superhero, what would it be? Who would it be?
Black Panther.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Martin, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to chat with us today. We've learned an incredible amount. And if people want to know more about what you're doing or what Facebook is doing in this space, where should they go online to learn about these activities?
Facebook.com/business.
Well, we appreciate your being here, Martin. As Sarah, appreciate everything that you do to make this fun.
And introduce you to Instagram.
And
yes.
Introduce me to Instagram.
I'm really excited about that, by the way.
And Drupal.
Yes.
And so if you want to learn more about this episode or other episodes, you can go online to retailgetsreal.com. And we really need your feedback about this episode and maybe episodes that you'd like for us to air. So once again, thanks for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real.